This is Scott Becker, and I'm thrilled today to be joined by one of the most interesting guys in healthcare today, most interesting speakers, business consultant, thinker, Nate Kaufman. Nate, can you take a moment to introduce yourself, and then we'll talk about leadership today, great health systems, what great systems are doing, and more.
Sure. I've been in healthcare since 1978. I started out as an executive in some of the for-profit systems, but for most of my career, I've been a strategic advisor to health systems and large medical groups. I've done quite a number of physician hospital transactions, and most recently, I've been retained part-time to work with a health system to help them operate their service lines and also grow their system. So I'm actually working in the trenches with a health system right now, and we're building a number of joint ventures and growing the system in the Northeast.
Well, and thank you. And tell us, you know, you see this great divergence of health systems that are really going in the right direction, doing great things, and those that are closing and doing poorly. Is that based on luck and geography and just the place where a system was coming into this period of time, or is it based on leadership and what leaders are doing? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. I think if you're in the wrong place, obviously things are not going to get better, but what happens is that the leadership recognizes that a lot of that has to do with asset allocation, and they exit those markets. So ultimately, it all has to do with leadership.
And in terms of leadership, what are great systems or great leaders doing right now? What are things that systems that are sort of making progress, getting deeper with their communities, what are they doing right that's setting them up in good shape for good results now or in the future?
Let me give you a couple bullet points. I think first, great leaders judge their own performance and the performance of their system based on metrics, and specifically based on market share and profitability. Market share measures how well the customer values their services relative to the competition. The greater the market share, the more the customers like their service. And profitability measures how well a facility or service is being operated. So I think if a leader's market share or profitability is going down, it means they have a problem with their leadership. The second thing is great leaders differentiate between signals and all the noise in the industry. Signals are the strategies that improve performance of an organization. And noise, the noises that are out there are just wastes of time and rabbit holes that take the wrong direction. And great leaders can differentiate between the two and determine what's the right direction to take the organization and what's just a bunch of noise that they shouldn't follow. The third thing is that great leaders recognize the critical importance of collaborating with physicians, and they don't delegate that to junior members of the organization, but they recognize how important that is, and they assign that responsibility to themselves and the most senior members of the health system. And most importantly, from my perspective, great leaders don't sit around on the sidelines and criticize and comment, but rather they jump in the foxhole with their local teams, and they understand what the local folks are dealing with, and they become part of the solution rather than part of the problem. So I think there's a lot of important traits of great leaders, and there are some out there, but there's also a bunch of folks that just don't get it.
Talk about for a moment this filtering concept and not chasing every new thing and not jumping down the rabbit hole, you know, and wasting lots of resources focusing on a rabbit hole that's not really important. Any examples of those that you've seen over the course of the last several years?
Well, most of the folks that have developed their own provider-based health plan, for example, have failed. I've seen a lot of health systems create these, quote, innovation centers that haven't worked. This, quote, move to value, most of that has actually resulted in a shift of wealth from providers to payers. There's many more examples where I guess this is going to be blasphemy, but this whole issue of social determinants of health, which I think is sounds good and is well-meaning, I really don't understand exactly what the how that's going to impact market share or profitability of an organization, or what the measurable impact on the community actually is going to be. So I'm concerned about its impact on the financial stability of a health system when we're dealing in such a very difficult financial time right now. All of these things, from my perspective, are concerning when we really need to be focusing on our primary objective, which is really to focus on hospital care, primary care, the things that are where we've invested so much capital. We really need to protect the financial viability of our organizations, and yet we are diffusing our efforts. So it's a concern at this point.
Thank you. And other things that you see, when you see leaders doing things right, what are some of the things you see leaders doing right?
Well, a couple of things, several things. You can't cut your way to profitability. So good leaders need to be obsessed with growth and market share, but not at the cost of profitability. For example, cutting rates is a race to the bottom. So you need to be focusing on growth, good, profitable growth. Managed care contracting is a science. And so good leaders are focusing on obtaining the skills and understanding what it takes to get good rates, quality rates from the managed care companies. Another area is asset rationalization. If they're not number one or a strong number two in a market, good leaders recognize that what they need to do is either sell that health system in the local market or merge with somebody else because it's depleting their resources in other areas. And if they have multiple facilities in a market where they have duplicate services, they need to consolidate. And if a facility is or a service is severely underutilized and is losing money, they need to shut it down. Good leaders recognize that strategy is as much about what they need to stop doing as what they need to grow. And finally, a major area is good leaders recognize that the days of HOPD rates are almost over and that they need to develop a robust, strong, community-based ancillary delivery system because that's where healthcare is moving and that they need to move aggressively in that area, in many cases in joint venture with the local doctors. So these are areas from my perspective that I see the progressive health systems moving in order to adapt to the new environment.
Thank you very, very much. And so you talked a lot about what systems should be doing. You also touched a little bit on what systems shouldn't be doing. Talk about dealing with unprofitable lines or lines that are drained on the system, on the talent and money of the system, and how do systems address that, particularly given some of the politics around all those things?
Again, if you're a metric-based organization, things just aren't going to get better. You can't use mission as an excuse to stay in a market or to continue to provide a service. This healthcare has never been harder, and the hospital and health system business has never been harder. And what we see around the country, and I said this in my LinkedIn post, is that when you have a health system that you're trying to prop up that is really failing, what you're doing is you're depleting the other local markets that need capital, that should be succeeding. You're depleting them of capital, and so they're going to start failing. So a good health system leader recognizes when they need to exit markets and when they need to invest in what markets they need to invest in and what markets they need to leave. And as you look around the country at the health systems that are the national systems that are successful, asset allocation is the most important. And this hubris that people have, or health system leaders have, that any market they can be successful in, it's just not true. If you don't have the basic raw materials to be successful and the market position to be successful, there's really nothing you can do to succeed, and you really need to exit.
And thank you. Talk about the hubris or the arrogance of leaders, entrepreneurs, whoever they might be, who think they've done one thing great so they could succeed in other things, which might not be as close to their core. Talk about that in the context of whatever you'd like, hospital CEOs or leaders, of that arrogance.
Yeah, I call them third basers. They were hired by a large health system, and they were hired on third base and think they hit a triple. I mean, at the end of the day, the market forces are the market forces, and just because you're making $5 or $6 million doesn't necessarily mean that those market forces are going to change. And what they tend to do is they go into the market doesn't change, and they begin to start cutting expenses. And again, in this market, you cannot cut your way to profitability. And as a result, the facilities begin to suffer more and more, and the doctors begin to leave, and the facilities hemorrhage more and more. And eventually, the market forces do come to play. The facilities have to be sold, and at that point in time, they may be irreparable, and nobody wants to buy them. And then they get written off, and it becomes a huge problem. So it's much better to really understand the situation on the front end and not believe that you have some miracle cure. Although I will say there are colleagues of mine who will be happy to convince you through magical thinking that they can turn the place around through consumerism or some sort of new health plan or some other kind of shiny object, as we mentioned earlier. But the truth of the matter is that the fundamentals of healthcare and hospital management really haven't changed.
So at the end of the day, if you want to succeed, you better have a growth plan and a plan to gain market share, grow revenues, because in an inflationary world that we have, there's no way you can cut cost to make things work in the long run and still be great.
That's correct. In fact, it's gotten harder with the now that hips and knees are going outpatient, spines going outpatient, there's a chance that interventional cardiology could go outpatient. The population of inpatient services and commercial inpatient care has depleted. You add to that the fact that the commercial insurance companies have become even more stingy than ever, and they're willing to go out of network with just about anybody, as we've seen with Mission Hospital in North Carolina, which was basically a monopoly. So this business has gotten really difficult. The nuts and bolts of running a healthcare system have become extremely difficult. So turning around a healthcare system that is in third place in a market is almost impossible at this time.
And so one final question, Nate, and I know this is the position you'd like to be, but if you were the czar of the world or the czar of the healthcare world, what would you do?
Well, a couple things. Everyone has their answer, you know, Medicare for all and all these things. Again, if you're in the foxhole like I am, you have to recognize that incremental steps are the only solution. You can't turn the healthcare system on its head. First of all, the doctors won't tolerate it. So there's a couple steps that I would consider. The first thing I would do is I would require a standard all-payer revenue cycle system, including an all-payer system for approvals and denials. Why is a medical treatment okay for United Healthcare but denied for Anthem? There's so much money wasted when we have 12 different payers and we have 12 different approval processes. So why can't we have one system for revenue cycle for all payers, including Medicare?
Let me ask you a question on that. So, you know, there's this question of nefariousness. You know, a cousin has a large claim. The insurance company continues to sort of send it back, deny it, slow it down, obfuscate. Is that a strategy, or are they just really trying to get it right? What's the concept on that? Is that typically nefariousness and just a way of doing business to try and slow down claims payment or stop claims payment, or is there actually good business in that?
Well, one medical director of an insurance company said to me, well, it depends. As it gets closer to reporting earnings, it's a lot harder to get a claim approved than it is after earnings are reported. I'll leave it at that. So I would say it's somewhat nefarious. Another question to ask is, how many times has an insurance company said, no, you shouldn't have that procedure, you should have a more expensive procedure if they're so interested in healthcare?
Absolutely. So tell me more about, if you were the healthcare czar, you wouldn't necessarily have an all-payer system, one-payer system, but you would have a system where all those things, denials, accessibility, notifications, certifications are all done the same. So a single method of doing that, almost
right,
like interoperability for that.
Right. That would save a huge amount of money. And also it would standardize and it would identify nefarious practices, because if one between payers, the second thing I would do is allow Medicare and Medicaid to negotiate drug prices as a single entity. So again, these would be incremental. It wouldn't change the doctor-patient relationship or anything like that. The third thing I would do is I would require antitrust provisions to apply equally to payers and providers. And then the other thing that I would do is require payers to pay providers, not patients, for out-of-network payments. I mean, those would be some very simple things to do. Keep in mind that for the first time this year, that payments or healthcare as a percentage of GDP actually went down. And I believe a reason for that is we finally hit the peak. 50% of commercially insured patients are covered by self-funded plans, meaning large companies, and they're figuring out a way to get costs down. And 40% of Medicare beneficiaries are now covered by Medicare Advantage, which are large insurance companies, and they too are figuring out how to get costs down. So to some extent, we're beginning to see, you know, the free market beginning to work. So if we just did those few things, drug prices would come down dramatically, and the administrative costs associated with healthcare would come down dramatically. And I think that would help significantly.
Well, thank you very, very much. Nate, it's always a pleasure to visit with you, one of the smartest, clearest thinking people in the world of healthcare. How do people reach you if they're a system, if they want to consult with you, they want to talk to you, they want you to speak, or how do people reach Nate Kaufman?
So I'm available to health systems, medical groups, and other healthcare companies to conduct board and executive retreats and provide strategic advice and run physician hospital transactions. You can find me on my website and also on LinkedIn.
Well, fantastic. Nate, just a pleasure visiting with you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott.